5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Wednesday, July 29th on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, newly discovered fossils in Alaska are changing the way researchers view prehistoric life. But first, an Anchorage couple say reckless behavior on a Kenai beach is responsible for the death of their service dog, who was hit by a speeding ATV last week. Daniel Charlie Cortez had traveled from Anchorage to Dipnet when 2-year-old Juana was struck. Cortez remembers Juana, a mixed-breed rescue with black fur, as well-behaved and attentive. Cortez has a medical condition that makes him lose consciousness. Juana was trained to alert him before an episode, wake him up after losing consciousness, and seek help from others if needed.
This dog was the most perfect dog that naturally just, you know, it was in her nature.
Juana was with Cortez when she was killed by the ATV. Kenai limits ATVs to 10 miles per hour when driven near people. Cortez says he did not see law enforcement patrolling the area when Juana was killed, and while a friend spoke with police, officers did not arrive before he took Juana to the veterinarian.
Definitely in situations like with Kenai Beach and Kusilov Beach, where there's a lot of dipnetters and a lot of movement, I think it's hard when there's no enforcement, right? It's like the Wild West.
Although Kenai's personal use fishery is managed by the state, the city of Kenai helps facilitate day-to-day operations on fishing grounds inside city limits. That includes seasonal enforcement by the Kenai Police Department. Police Chief Dave Ross says his department brings on 5 extra officers each summer specifically to patrol the fishery. They're the officers who write parking tickets and check fishing permits. They're also in charge of monitoring how fast ATVs, dune buggies, and other beach vehicles are traveling. Ross says no charges were filed against the driver of the ATV in this case, but he's asked Kenai seasonal officers to more closely monitor beach traffic. Claire Cortez, Daniel's wife, says Juana's tragedy could happen to anyone. Next time, she says it could be a person who gets hit. Claire is a born and bred Alaskan, and she says reckless behavior on the beach threatens what makes summer fishing in Alaska so special.
We, as a community in Alaska, need to help protect one another. And if we do see somebody acting recklessly or somebody driving when they shouldn't be, things like that, it's important to speak up.
Since Juana's death, Daniel and Claire have had an outpouring of support. They're asking people who want to help to donate to the Kenai Peninsula Animal Lovers. That's the rescue organization that brought them Juana exactly 2 years and 1 day before she died. Daniel described the experience as poetic. The same veterinarians who treated Juana the day she died also took care of her as a puppy before she was adopted. And he says they're grateful to see the community love Juana as much as he and Claire did. Nothing can bring Juana back, Cortez says. But as he goes through the process of finding and training a new service dog, he hopes her story will be an enduring call for vigilance when Alaskans take to the beach each summer. South Central Alaska residents will likely see costlier home heating bills for the next few winters. That's as the region's primary gas utility, NSTAR, says nearby Cook Inlet has become a less reliable source of gas than in the past.
We are going to have a problem with deliverability from gas supply out of the Cook Inlet for the next couple years.
That's NSTAR President and CEO John Sims. Sims spoke at a press conference at Anchorage City Hall Tuesday that included Anchorage Mayor Suzanne LaFrance and Matsu Borough Mayor Edna DeVries. Sims says the rates consumers pay for gas and how available gas will largely be determined by how cold it gets this winter.
So if we have a winter like we did last year, we are going to have significant challenges and likely see rolling blackouts.
Sim says there is little interest from energy companies to expand production in Cook Inlet, and NSTAR has already had to turn away new large-scale customers to focus on supplying existing ratepayers. The company is working on a plan to import natural gas, which is measured in thousands of cubic feet, or MCF, but Sim says that's much more expensive.
Right now, LNG import prices are right around $22 per MCF. What we're paying today is $10.80. So that is not an economically sustainable way to move forward as a state.
Mayor LaFrance says the impact from high energy costs won't just be felt by households.
For local businesses, higher energy costs squeeze profits and threaten jobs. And for the municipality, Higher energy bills strain our operating costs, putting pressure on our budget, which impacts municipal service delivery and our taxpayers.
Sims, LaFrance, and other stakeholders say they're pushing the Alaska legislature to finalize a plan to kick off construction of the Alaska LNG pipeline project to help offset the dwindling gas supply. The pipeline would take years to complete, but Sims says it's important to get it started as soon as possible.
I'm not sure there's anything the legislature can do this year. What the legislature can do is try to expedite the long-term solution so that it's here as quickly as possible, so that we're not constantly dealing with this.
State lawmakers were called back to Juneau this week for a third special session aimed at addressing tax break proposals for the Gasline project. Only a handful of legislators returned to the Capitol as of Monday, while they waited for a new bill from Governor Mike Dunleavy to consider. And finally, dinosaurs weren't the only creatures roaming the Earth 70 million years ago. Newly discovered fossils in Alaska are changing the way researchers view prehistoric life in the state. And as KNOM's Quinn White tells us, their name draws inspiration from the Inupiaq language.
It's hard for life to thrive in the far north. Most of the animals we see on the tundra today are hardy creatures, built to withstand the harsh environment. But tens of millions of years ago, something else, something small, dominated the Arctic. A new study published by the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences identifies three previously unknown species of multituberculates, an extinct rodent-like mammal group. Their fossil samples were found in northern Alaska.
The Arctic isn't just this sort of evolutionary backwater. Like, a lot of things were going on there. We know.
That's Sarah Shelley, a paleontologist and postdoctoral research associate at the University of Lincoln in the United Kingdom. She was one of the authors of the study. She says the fossils discovered near the North Slope are about 73 million years old. That means they outlasted even the dinosaurs.
And we hypothesized that because it lived in the Arctic, it might have had adaptations that allowed it to survive that lineage to survive the extinction.
The remarkable fossils needed a name. Shelley says the team started with an Inupiaq dictionary for inspiration. Shelley eventually connected with Gail Smith-Heisler, an Inupiaq language teacher in Nome. Smith-Heisler describes the process as a lot of back and forth.
I was able to open up my resource documents and kind of verify that, okay, yeah, this seems appropriate, or I would suggest maybe sticking with this root word because you cut off a part of it and it doesn't make sense after that. And then they take that into consideration.
The three species are named Camarudon borealis, meaning northern curved tooth, Kayakgruk peregrinus, or little wandering hero, and Kinixic cosmodon polaris, meaning polar frost ornamented tooth.
Historically, a lot of species have been named for, well, people who are in the field, sometimes who discovered them if they're not.
This is Shelley again.
And there's been a big push to sort of move away from that now and actually recognize, sort of beyond the people, the regions they've come from.
It's a more nuanced approach to science, one that turned out to be deeply personal for Smith-Heisler.
I was really close with my grandma. Inupiaq was her first language.
Her grandmother is Edna Anungatoguk.
So we all lovingly called her Gaga.
Smith-Heisler was told to keep her involvement under wraps until the research paper was published. But she decided to tell her Gaga anyway. It was something Smith-Heisler knew she would be proud of.
Try not to get emotional, but with my grandmother, it was important to her that her family not be forgotten.
Anungatoguk passed away in October 2024, before the study was published. But having the opportunity to tell her grandmother about this project, Smith-Heisler says, is something she's very grateful for.
I feel very honored that I can grant my grandma's wish that her family isn't going to be forgotten, because, you know, it's a published document now, so her family name, her mom's name is always going to be memorialized in that way.
Shelley's team is still learning from and looking for more of the ancient fossils. If there are more found, she suspects they'll be back in touch with Smith Heisler for more inspiration. Reporting in Nome, I'm Quinn White.
And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Jake Dye in Kenai, from Wesley Early in Anchorage, and from Quinn White in Nome. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a great night.
The KDLL Board of Directors meets at 5:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at KDLL Studios in the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District building in Kenai and over Zoom. Meetings are open to the public. If you have an item you'd like to submit for board consideration, email info@kdll.org. Or if you're interested in joining the board, call 907-513-1996.